Hello, I'm Brandon, and I am just Brandon. Justine is not here today. There's been some complications with her work schedule that caused her to be unavailable. But here I am, and I have pages to talk to you guys about Tetris, and I look forward to this. It'll be another nice, cozy, you-and-me-style thing. But before we get into actual Tetris, how about some news? First bit of news is that if you like horror games, you probably heard of Layers of Fear. It was this first-person psychological horror based around this painter in, not Victorian era, I don't know what time period it was, but the painter goes mad, basically, and, like, his wife was disfigured after a department store fire. It was an adequately scary game. It was terrifying. I loved it. Well, there's now going to be a Layers of Fear 2 called Project Méliès, I think. It's a French name. It's based off of, like, Georges Méliès, which was this French filmographer, director. He was more or less like a pioneer for cinematography back when it was first starting. And this teaser was released for this project, and it appears to be about film and, like, early film concepts and whatnot. So it's looking like we're going to get a horror game based off of early film, following that trend of, like, art style and, like, a creative artist. That's all we know about this game at this time. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. Next bit of news is a less fortunate one. On last Tuesday, what is that, October 30th? Bethesda was going to hold a beta session for their upcoming RPG Fallout 76. This was going to be the first beta session that included PC and PS4 players. Well, unfortunately, PC players were finding that hours before the beta went live, if they were to interact with their game launcher, it would forget the existence of the preloaded game files, which means if you preloaded the game, it just wasn't there anymore. So surprise, surprise, you now have no game and have to re-download it. Now this is a 45 gigabyte game, which means if you weren't going to download it again in time, because this was a 2-hour beta session. You ain't downloading this whole thing, and with everyone trying to re-download it, speeds were slower than average or throttled from the server side. So basically, anyone affected by this problem, which was myself included, mind you, I was very upset. They basically just didn't get to play in the beta. There were pitchforks and torches and whatnot on Twitter. Bethesda support was like, hey, we know, we're trying to figure it out, we're sorry. And they also said that to properly apologize, they have extended the beta session of this next one, which is going to be Thursday, so it'll have happened by the time you hear this. They've extended that by a total of 6 hours. It's now going from 2 p.m. until 11 p.m. Now, I get why people are mad at this. This is a pretty major issue to happen for what is essentially a promotional event. But I do have some good thoughts on it, and that's more or less that. The first one being, had this happened on the day of launch instead of during a beta session, the uproar would have been much bigger. Massive, even. Players would be just upset that they don't get to play on the day of launch, and I get that entirely. So it's good that it happened now during this testing period than, say, on the day of launch. And this is essentially exactly what they wanted. They wanted to find problems so that they could solve it before launch, and that's exactly what this caused. And with the added time on the Thursday session, that's 6 more hours on that day, which if you subtract the 2 hours lost from this last session, that makes it a positive net of 4 hours. So PC players are essentially getting to play for 4 more hours, and that's cool. It's unfortunate this happened, but all in all, yeah, that's news. Final bit is weirder. It's called Deltarune. If you're a fan of Undertale, you may have noticed that At the time of saying this, last night there was some weird tweets happening by the Undertale Twitter. And they essentially broke down to, hey, tune in tomorrow for something big. And sure enough, you came back. They were like, it's time for something new, something different, experimental. And they linked to deltarune.com, where if you go there, you don't see any kind of game stuff. You just see a disclaimer. And this disclaimer is saying, hey, this is different. By agreeing to this, to play this, you agree to whatever happens. Absolutely anything. And it offers a download to their installer. Now, I'm not going to tell you about the game, because, for good reason, because when you start it up, it straight up asks, hey, don't talk about this for the next 24 hours. Let people find it first. And while my journalistic integrity says report the news, I'm going to be honoring the developer's request of not actually saying what it is. I will say this, though, some non-game related things, in a sense. Deltarune draws some interesting attention, the first one being that Deltarune is an anagram for Undertale. I don't know if that means anything or not. Another thing is that the Delta is a symbol, and you see the symbol in use in Azrael's chest, I believe it was. So there is like a connection to Undertale. And developer Toby Fox, I believe his name was, he has mentioned that the game may ask for security permissions and that is to be expected and that you should allow it to pass. Now, I get it. If somebody's like, hey, you should let my computer program bypass your security, that's kind of a red flag. But given he did develop a very well-known indie title and no one has reported any security problems yet, it's safe to assume this one is safe. So that's another thing. And it's because this software, this game, accesses your game data from Undertale. So if you've played Undertale and you've done things like genocide runs and whatnot, it knows. And it will know that. As for whether or not that plays in part and how, that's up for you to determine. I've not played the whole thing myself. I stopped partially through because I didn't know how long it would be. But if you haven't already been spoiled or played yourself, I recommend you playing it without spoiling it so you can get the proper experience. That's how the developer appears to want it to be done. So that is the last of our news. How about some Tetris, folks? All right. Tetris is a classic. It's a flagship video game. It's an extremely familiar video game. People who don't play video games know about it. People who don't play video games play Tetris. It's big. And to make up for the lack of, like, casual conversation, because I'm sitting in a closet by myself, I've printed out a bunch of fun facts and, like, the history and the scientific aspects and everything about Tetris. I've got some cool learnings that's gonna happen, so why don't you just sit down, or don't if you're doing this at work, just put on your fuzzy slippers or work shoes or whatever, and just get learned with me, yo. So, we're talking about Tetris now because November 9th, a bit over a week from now, a new game is coming out called Tetris Effect. And it's a highly anticipated rendition of Tetris because it does a few things differently. It looks absolutely amazing because it takes advantage of the graphical potential of modern consoles. I believe it's actually only on PlayStation 4. But I'll get it. I believe so, yeah. It's visually amazing. It's very stunning. If you haven't seen, like, a gameplay video, I recommend looking it up and just watching a little bit. It's beautiful. But Tetris Effect does a few things differently. One is that it intentionally sets it to music. And what that means is that sometimes when you play, sound effects you initiate will be in time to the soundtrack playing behind you while you're playing. And a good example is there's this Japan style, I don't know what the proper word is, but it's like those tung tung drums and whatnot. And your motions play these traditional Japanese sounds, and somehow they line up with the track behind you, and it like evolves as you play. It's very interesting to take in. But it also features two other cool new things. One of them is a zone mechanic, and this is a first for the franchise. It is you're able to pause time, basically. You build up this zone meter, and then when you activate it, nothing moves, but you can still place blocks, and that essentially allows you to get more than four rows out at once. Now, Tetris being what it is, every piece is every piece is four blocks put together. And we'll get more into that later. But because of this, the most lines you can eliminate at any time are four, because of the 4x1 shaped block. You can go and delete four rows. If you don't know, in Tetris, you place down a number of shaped blocks with the goal of removing them by completing a horizontal line. I guess if you know anything about Tetris, you wouldn't have known that, but I just want to make sure that's clear. Yeah, blocks fall, you can move and rotate them and place them where you'd like, and the overall goal is to score points by eliminating lines by filling those lines with blocks. So, a Tetris is the term used when you eliminate four lines in one turn. And like I said, that's the most you could do because blocks were only four, like, shaped out of four smaller blocks. Well, when you can pause time, you're able to do more than four. You can get eight in a row. That's called an octris, or was it an octotris? And, like, you can get as high as, like, a dodecatris, and it's crazy. And the last new feature it added was actually a VR mode, because the PlayStation, it has its own VR system called the PlayStation VR, which I'm a huge proprietor of, and we'll talk about that in a different episode, but they have virtual reality options, and Tetris Effect supports VR mode. And sure, you're just sitting there watching a screen in front of you, but that VR is cool all the same. But it has one neat thing about it, and that VR mode actually offers the lowest potential latency ever for Tetris, because it's a thinking game, so you need to be able to, like, process information and respond as quick as you can. And there's a delay between when a game outputs a signal and your TV displays that signal. This was a common issue back when, like, Guitar Hero and Rock Band were common, because the audio to visual delay had to be perfect. Well, VR also needs extremely short delay. If you turn your head and it takes half a second for you to see that turn happen, you're gonna get sick. So it needs to make sure that you're seeing exactly what motions happen when you move your head. So it has extremely low latency. So professional players were actually able to perform better in VR mode because they had the least latency ever made for this game. Anyway, that's the Tetris effect. Let's talk about the history of Tetris itself. So, it actually started back in 1984. It was developed by a guy called Alexei Pajitnov, perhaps? I'm sorry, sir, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. He was a Russian folk. And he was an artificial intelligence researcher working at the Soviet Academy of Sciences and Computer Center in Moscow, Russia. Now, what he would do is he would test the hardware of the technology available to him by making games for this hardware. That's how he'd test it. It's like benchmarking, but back in the 80s. Well, one day, he decided to make a game based off of a wooden board game known as, what do I have it here? It's called Pentominoes, or maybe it's Pentominoes. I'm guessing Pentominoes, because, like, dominoes. And the goal of the board game was to fill up the space using these wooden shapes that are made out of, like, five individual segments, you know, five blocks, the penta. And he decided he was going to make his own computer imitation of that, but he found that the five block shape was a bit too dynamic, and he instead opted for a four block shape, the tetra part. So he decided to call these parts tetrominoes, which is what those pieces, like, so you've got the L shape block, you've got the J shape, you've got the I shape, or the straight line, you've got an S shape, you've got a Z shape, you have a cube shape, and you have a T shape. And, like, those are the only shapes you can make using four blocks connected to each other. And so he had developed this, and at the time, it was actually made out of text. So it was like on-screen text motions, like ASCII art, I guess. But it, you know, it dynamically moved. Because technology back then was limited. It was the 80s. Like, they didn't have that good of graphical affections. But as technology improved, so did Tetris. Well, the game, he found that it was originally just stacked and stacked and stacked, but you eventually ran out of room on the screen, and he was like, well, how am I going to clear up room? Oh, I know. How about when you create a horizontal line, it disappears, and the game continues? And that's kind of how he settled on this infinite play of Tetris. And he had cited that the name Tetris, which is a weird name, I admit, it is a combination of the word tetra, which means four, and tennis. So it's like four-shaped tennis. I don't fully know his logic behind that, since the parts don't come back. I think it's more like a weird manual pachinko, but I'm not about to pick hairs with the man. Well, he had developed it, and he thought it was cool. He shared it with his friends, and it was popular, and people liked it. And it was a shareware. It was a basically more or less an indie product of the 80s. Its initial spread was just, hey, do you have a friend? Well, here's my floppy disk of Tetris. Why not copy it for yourself? And it just kind of spread by hand that way for the longest time. So it used to be just like this shareware, hey, check out this cool project I made. Eventually, it was uploaded to his own personal website, where it stayed there up until 2003, where it was removed for reasons. And I'll get into that, but yeah, so companies had found it, IBM had found it, and they had actually made their own copy, and they tried to get the legal rights to it, but they had already sold the legal rights to it before getting permission from Alexei himself. So there's this weird, complicated legal battle between the creator and all these companies wanting to make and sell it for themselves and whatnot. And that legal battle existed up until, oh, what was it, 2006? But before that, it didn't actually reach America, because, yeah, this was all in Russia, by the way. It didn't reach America until 1987, when it was developed for the IBM computer. Then it started making its way to things like the Commodore 64, and then eventually onto the Nintendo Entertainment System, the NES. And from there, it just kept skyrocketing. It was made onto Sega devices, it was made on Nintendo devices, it made its way to Xbox and PlayStations and PC and mobile devices. If it existed, there was a good chance there was a Tetris for it. Like, back when flip phone days, when they had those basic phone games, there was probably a Tetris variant. Those knockoff games where you get them from shady flea markets, and they're like plastic, and they're called shape blockums and whatnot. Those probably had their own form of Tetris. But it wasn't up until 2006 when Alexei himself founded a company called the Tetris Company. Which was, their job is essentially just, this company owns Tetris. If you want to make a Tetris game, you got to license it through us. So he's back to owning the rights to it and whatnot. That seems to have been resolved. Good for you, Alexei. Glad to hear it. And that's more or less it on the history of Tetris. But since then, it's developed a lot of scientific interests in multiple directions. The first one we're going to talk about is what's called the infinite gameplay impossibility. Because Tetris it's an arcade game by nature, so theoretically it's infinite. You know, as long as you keep clearing those blocks, those lines, you could play forever. Now, of course, eventually the game would get so fast the human mind could not comprehend it quickly enough, but if you were to assume that it did not get too fast and that someone could theoretically play at the maximum speed, unhindered by anything, then there was a theory that you could play forever. Well, scientists were like, well, hold on, no, you couldn't. Because of this impossibility. And the idea was that the S-shaped block and the Z-shaped block, if you were given nothing but those long enough, you would not be able to complete a line. And then you would not be able to complete another line. And it would just repeat that way. You would eventually be forced to create lines you could not get rid of, leading to your eventual failure. And because Tetris is randomly generated, like truly randomly generated, theoretically, you could eventually be given enough S and Z-shaped blocks to make that happen, ergo causing your game to end. Now, this hasn't really been seen in natural form yet, and that's because if you were to play a special form of Tetris that only gave you S and Z-shaped blocks, there've been people who have been put on record to have survived as many as 150 blocks before actual failure. So, theoretically, like, the odds of that are absolutely minuscule, almost non-existent. So it's never happened naturally, but theoretically it could happen. And that's that they call it the infinite gameplay impossibility, because eventually you'll be given a combo you simply cannot win with. And that led to another idea of like, well, what if it always gave you the wrong piece? And it sparked a game called Hatetris. Now, Hatetris had grown in popularity among the Tetris community, and it was developed by a guy called Quantum. It was Q-N-T-M. Granted, Quantum himself cites it as inspiration from something developed by another user named RRRR. But Hatetris is the idea that, what if Tetris gave you the worst possible piece every time? How well would you do? So, like, let's say you really needed that straight piece. Well, you're never going to get that straight piece. You'll get, instead, like, an S shape. And, of course, this guy, he developed, like, an AI to determine what the worst piece is. He describes it as not that complex, but extremely tedious to create. So I didn't look at the source code, which is publicly available if you want to look up Hatetris. Instead, so yeah, it gives you the worst blocks every time, all the time. And I've played it myself. It is very it's frustrating because, yeah, it's the worst luck guaranteed. And of course, as you may expect, it gives you a lot of S and Z-shaped blocks. And let's talk about the last scientific fun fact, which is, of course, Tetris Effect. The game that we're talking about earlier, you know, Tetris Effect, coming out in a week or so, that's based off of an actual scientific phenomena called the Tetris Effect, otherwise known as the Tetris Syndrome. And the idea behind Tetris Effect was, if you were to devote enough time and attention to an activity, you would eventually get to the point where you will start seeing and thinking about it both in your waking and your dreaming life. So you'll go to bed and you'll start having dreams about Tetris, or you'll close your eyes and you'll see falling tetrominoes just in the back of your eyelids, that kind of thing. And it was called the Tetris Effect because it was Tetris that kind of spawned an influx of this syndrome happening to people. When people, it can happen with non-Tetris games, of course, like jigsaw puzzles is another one that people reported a lot of. It can happen with board games. It can happen with anything you dedicate your time enough, assuming it has like a discernible pattern or whatnot. I myself have had Tetris Effect style dreams about surprise video games just because I'll have played that game that much. Well, this actually sparked a lot of scientific investigations into primarily the spatial cognition and procedural memory people have when they play Tetris. Example, there was a study that showed that someone who played Tetris for 30 minutes a day, every day, for long enough, when they were to take tests, they would perform better in aspects regarding mental rotation or what I have it here as, mental spatial skills. So basically they could imagine and they could visualize environments and spatial awareness better than someone who wasn't playing Tetris every day. You know, they make that joke of, haha, you're so good at packing the cards, probably because you play so much Tetris and stuff like that. But it's actually true. People who do play Tetris are better at that kind of thing because of it. And, well, that's what this study shows anyway. There was another study that they had these players who played Tetris, again, 30 minutes a day, and they performed MRI scans on them, as well as a study group that did not play Tetris, and they found that those playing Tetris actually had developed thicker, healthier gray matter in their brains, implying that, you know, the mental stimulation of Tetris led to just healthier brains. And that leads to all sorts of minor benefits that I'm not going to list because no. Though, despite this, you know, helping with like memory and whatnot, there was actually another study that showed that playing Tetris could help reduce the potential of developing traumatic memories. They had tested and theorized that if you were to play a bit of Tetris after experiencing a traumatic event, you were less likely to develop a traumatic memory of said event, and you were less likely to fall prone to PTSD-like symptoms in the future. And it's because of like the way Tetris kind of hogged your memory and like demanded your memory and your cognition, and it overlapped the bad memories. And that's just nifty. At least I think so. I almost swear. Sorry, I gotta quit being such a potty mouth. By the way, if you hadn't noticed, there's not actually going to be an ad break, because let's be real here, this entire podcast is more or less one big ad read for the Tetris effect, because I'm lame like that. No, it's just whenever I do these single, you know, talk to you guys one-on-one things, I get so focused on coming up with interesting content and like stuff to talk about that I don't stop to think of good, like good, funny ad reads. And I'm sure there's something here for Tetris, like construction company or cognitive test subjects or something, but I'm a busy man, you know, I didn't make anything. So do forgive me, I'll have something nice and funny for the next episode. Maybe I won't, we'll find out, I'm my own man. But how about this? I'm gonna take a sip of this here Sprite with cherry. And if you want to just like pause right here real quick and go get yourself a drink or a snack, maybe a bathroom break, whatever you need, just do a little bit of self-care right now, and I'll be right here. Ah, that is a refreshing beverage. I hope you enjoyed your nap, shower, food, or whatever you did. And let's get back to some cool discussion, shall we? I have a bit of fun facts here. And the first one is that you will often hear that Tetris was the best-selling franchise of all time. And I say franchise because I'm talking about every game, like the sales of every game combined. And people, you know, say, oh, Tetris is the best-selling one of all time because there's just so many renditions of Tetris that they all accumulate into a pretty hefty number. Now, as fun as I thought that was, it did make me think, is that true? Again, with my journalistic integrity, I decided to do a bit of research, and from what I found, Tetris is not actually the number one selling franchise of all time. It's Mario, surprise, surprise, at 570 million copies sold. Now, I say Mario, not just Super Mario Brothers, Mario. So that includes Mario Party, Mario Kart, all of the Mario sports games, like everything with the name Mario in it, basically, counted towards this number. So yeah, Mario was number one with a lot, 500, I think, I want to say that a fourth, how many people are on this planet? I don't know. Yeah, that's number one. Tetris is listed as actually number 9 with 170 million copies sold. And this makes sense. It sounds like when you look at the list itself, you know, Call of Duty is up there and whatnot. And some very understandable titles. Need for Speed was surprisingly high up. That one caught me off guard. I will say, though, that due to the age of Tetris, as well as the previous freeware status it held, I find that the numbers held there were a bit less reliable, but I'm hard-pressed to believe that there was a solid 400 million unaccounted for sales and consumptions of Tetris in order to beat it out. It's not the best-selling title of all time. Don't let people tell you that. Another fun fact is there was supposed to be a Tetris movie. Yeah, I love reporting on all of these, like, video game is going to become a movie thing. Like I said, the Mega Man live action thing happened a while back. There was the Castlevania Netflix thing and Doom 2006, that beauty. I think there's another Doom movie coming up too. Duke Nukem with John Cena. God, there's so many game movies. Assassin's Creed came out. I just want one that's good. Maybe I'm just, I don't know, maybe I'm biased. Anyway, there was supposed to be a Tetris movie. It was announced back in 2006. And I love it because it was described as an epic sci-fi adventure movie that would set up the lore for a trilogy. I don't know what that lore was going to be or what they possibly could have done to merit three movies about the game Tetris, but that's what their claims were. They were supposed to start filming and production in China with a budget of $80 million. Well, that was 2 years ago, and since then we have heard absolutely nothing. So it is implied that the movie never made it to production. It's just crashed down. Like a tetramino. I call them tetraminos. I'm sorry. They're tetrominos. I get it. I call them tetramino. I don't know why. I think it's just a more fun name. Like, the look at that alien race. Oh, they're the tetraminos. Don't stand next to us or we disappear. That was a fun tangent, wasn't it, ladies and gentlemen? I love Tetris. I like games that, like, are stimulating without being overly stimulating. The rules of Tetris are incredibly simple. You know, rotate the block, let them land, try to make a full line, you know, don't become overwhelmed. And yet it's still really satisfying on the brain to play, like, even at, like, a casual speed and whatnot. I mean, of course it is, otherwise it wouldn't have become so popular. And I think that nice stimulation is very satisfying and good for your brain, but I've already said all of that cool stuff. I used to have I don't remember what it was called. It was a Tetris game for the GameCube, and I thought it was so cool because, like, wow, the graphics are so sharp, and it had, like, this fire animations and whatnot. Of course, I say this all having looked at the Tetris effect and realizing how much better it now can be, but I really appreciated it at the time for what it is. Which just goes to show, that's all you need for Tetris, is just throw in the best looking graphics you can and you're solid. And that's what Tetris Effect did. That's what whatever that Tetris GameCube game was. I have it in this closet. In this closet I'm sitting in right now, there's a copy of that game. And I tried to find it because I wanted to play it before the podcast, but I can't find it. It is a mess in here. I am a garbage human being. But that's beside the point. I can't remember what it was. Was it my birthday? A friend of mine had gifted me the worst thing. It was Tetris Jenga. And yeah, so it's not an up and down block like usual Tetris style, but the Tetris pieces, the tetrominoes, were sideways, and, like, that's what you built the Jenga tower out of, and the idea was you had to pull them out that way. I liked the concept. The problem was they used smooth plastic for the pieces, which means they didn't really stand on each other very well. They're very inclined to slide under pressure, as smooth plastic tends to do. So it was a very unreliable game setup, which is a shame because I loved the concept. It's just garbage. And I tried to get Justine to play that with me, but we didn't find time. Surprised she wasn't that interested in playing Tetris Jenga. Not that I blame her. I still have that. I just keep it aside because I'm this weird thing about holding on to gifts. So that is Tetris, folks. I've more or less said everything. It's a short episode, partially because it's me alone, partially because it's Tetris. There's not a lot of deep lore to get into, you know? It's Tetris. And what am I going to say? You know, I remember days back on the old farm where me and my grandpappy would play Tetris as the cows come home. No, that's... I don't have that. I'm sorry. Sorry for those wanting those tearjerker stories. No, my grandfather preferred, what was it, Super Mario World? So I'll give you some heartwarming country town home, gee, thanks, Papa, style narrative next time. But this time I think we're going to go ahead and end it here. I've told you all sorts of fun facts about Tetris, so go play it. There's like a free version, I think, on app stores. I'll have to check into that again. But I believe, like, EA has a version of Tetris on the App Store. If you just want to try it. If not, you can go onto your web browser, just type in the words Play Tetris Online. There will be 1.5 million different Tetris games you can just straight up play. No problem. Or, you know, invest in Tetris Effect. Or, okay, no, I have a better idea. Go to our website. Go to thelizardrock.com/support. Follow the Humble Bundle store link that we have there. That's our good old affiliate link. And then search for Tetris. Find yourself a Tetris game. Buy that and play that. I would like some affiliate money. That's definitely not me milking that cow for what it's worth. I'm kidding. You don't have to. Do whatever you want. Anyway, I'm rambling. How about some housekeeping? Some proper housekeeping. If you enjoyed this episode or you enjoy our other episodes, try giving us a review on, like, iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Seriously, though, hear me out. You can be the biggest fan of our show if you want. Few things will help us grow more than what you could do in, like, 30 seconds. Just tweeting the show. I saw a fan, they had tweeted about the show a while back, and I saw a spike in our downloads because of it, and, like, that helps us. We get new viewers from you guys talking about it, and if you're not someone who likes to, you know, go promoting the things you're into, I get it, some people just would rather keep to themselves, then these reviews are the other fantastic way you can do it. You just go to the iTunes page, write a review. If you don't want to write a review, you can just give a star rating. If you write the review, we get to see the nice things you say about us, which is always cool, but just that the 5-star reviews help a ton. I see it in our analytics. Otherwise, if you want to follow our Twitter, you can do so at Cozy Co-op. It's Cozy Co-op Podcast. There's no spaces and no lines, no dashes. Links to all of this can be found in the show notes, of course, if you'd rather just click those. We have an email. If you'd like to email us, you can email us at cozycoop, no dash line, at thelizardrock.com. That is my preferred place for you to go and recommend things, because, like, I check that. I mean, I check Twitter, too. Do whatever you want. You are a free person. But if you want to email us, you can email that. We recommend things like feedback on an old episode. You want to recommend a game or something that we talk about in the future. You want to tell us an interesting factoid or like a anecdote relating to a game we're going to talk about. That's cool. Send us pictures of your Tetris blocks. No, that doesn't make sense. Your Tetris high score? Yeah, I like that. Send us a picture of your Tetris high score. And we'll have our own Cozy Co-op leaderboard, why not? I'll post mine. Yeah, see a picture of mine in the show notes. That'll be fun. The news you heard earlier, you can find that at thelizardrock.com. That is my personal website. I write video game news there. I say daily, but it's mostly weekdays. But I write news there, you know, 1 to 3 news posts a day talking about the latest happenings. It's where I go to get the news for the podcast. It's a nice place if you want an honest and, like, unfiltered perspective on what's happening in video games. You know, if this company does a bad thing, I'm going to say, hey, this is kind of a bad thing that they did, or, you know, people are reacting negatively to this. It's a fresh perspective compared to, like, IGN, and, like, I don't trust them to give accurate reports on certain things, you know, capitalism, but I'm ranting again. If you want to support the podcast, other than, like, support it directly, you can do so by visiting thelizardrock.com/support. There you can read about how we keep the podcast afloat, as well as ways you can support it, like through direct donations or by, like I mentioned earlier, buying a video game for yourself through the Humble Store. Yeah, that's no extra cost to you when you do that. We just get a small portion of it if you use our affiliate link. That is it. The next episode... I liked it when I heard about this one. It's not a game, but we are going to talk about hardware. We're going to talk about consoles, the console system now, the console economy, the cultures now, what they used to be. You know, with all of them, Nintendo Game Dude and the X-Boys and whatnot. No, do not look up X-Boys. That's different. But yeah, we're going to talk about hardware because it can be overwhelming to a casual player. You know, do I get the Xbox? Do I get the PlayStation? What is a Nintendo Switch? Why should I care? You know, why you should not buy the Ouya, stuff like that. And we'll talk about that in our next episode. Otherwise, that is it for us today. Cozy up with us next week on The Cozy Co-op. Outro music.